We did receive quite a number of questions from different people who were not able to attend the call today who asked if I could ask their questions for them. So I have quite a list of questions.
Okay, great. So
we'll ask those, but I will try to leave a little bit of time towards the very end, as we always do, for people to ask their own questions. Let me first of all welcome and invite Christina Chambreau, who's a doctor of veterinary medicine, a personal friend, and as I said earlier, one of the most incredible networkers, advocators, educators that we have in the homeopathic community. She's just one of the most wonderful people I know, and she's done really committed her life to promoting and serving homeopathy. So we're really fortunate to have her. She is the founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy, and she's also on the faculty of the National Center for Homeopathy Summer School. She's in charge of the Veterinary Advice Line, and maybe she can tell us a little bit more about that later. And she teaches courses around the country in veterinary homeopathy, always following the principles of the Organon. And she's also written the Healthy Animals Journal, which is a wonderful work that helps you to track the symptoms and essence of the animal during the evaluation process. So thank you, Christina, for joining us again. It's always a pleasure.
You are absolutely welcome. I'm hearing a little echo, which is fine for me. Is it sounding okay for you?
Yeah, it's fine. It's probably the fact that I'm calling from Japan, and the lines are probably not as ideal as we want them to be. Christina, I think the first question I wanted to ask you is, you know, I know a lot of people who work with animals, they use combination remedies, and you know they'll just treat for the local symptoms. And I'm curious, is it in veterinary homeopathy, is it possible to find what we call the quote unquote constitutional or chronic remedy state for the patient, for the animal that's that we're treating?
Absolutely. Just as people get over the counter combination remedies for their children. And for themselves, they do the same thing for their animals, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it leaves you in the lurch if it doesn't work because you don't know what to do next. The very best way of prescribing for animals is exactly the same as prescribing for people, especially if you think about prescribing for an infant, because then you can't ask the infant questions and get answers anyway. And so you do the same thing with dogs, cats, horses, birds that you would do with an infant. You list all the symptoms that are currently present. You list anything that's ever happened in the past. You particularly focus on modalities, characteristic symptoms, things that are more unusual. You look for a cause, something that could have triggered it, gotten it going, and then find the remedy that's the best match.
And Christina, what about the mental emotional symptoms that we use so prevalently in homeopathic practice for humans? Can you still use that type of information? And how much is it useful? And do you have to do some type of interpretation, or how does that work?
Well, you're absolutely right, Kim, that you have to do some interpretation, and that's where it gets tricky. Because is an animal sensitive to loud noises when they go berserk during a thunderstorm? Are they afraid of loud noises? Or is it that a loud noise triggers a remembrance of being abandoned or abused at some time in the past? There's so many things you don't know. Some homeopaths, Dr. Pitcairn, for instance, says that emotional symptoms are not very useful at all. Other homeopaths, like Jeff Levy, use emotional symptoms a lot and find them to be very useful. What I say is use emotional symptoms, and I just wouldn't put a lot of weight on them. Sometimes it's very clear, and other times it's not. So if you have an animal who has maybe asthma and is having difficulty breathing, and every single time you pet the animal and the breathing ameliorates, then you could use mind petting or magnetism ameliorates, or mind company ameliorates. So you definitely can use, sometimes it's very clear, and then you would count on that symptom. Other times the symptoms are not so sure, like is the dog going out, desiring to go outdoors because it has a mental, emotional fear of being indoors. It feels better mentally or emotionally to be outdoors because it's chasing things and has a more exciting time outside. Is a dog biting or being aggressive because they're domineering, dictatorial, or because they're angry, or because they're fearful and acting angry because they're fearful? So you have to, sometimes the way to do it is to take the physical symptoms and the etiology and the modalities and then try different mental interpretations to help you. Or if you've narrowed it down to 5 to 10 remedies, as you're reading about the remedies in the Materia Medica, you'll start seeing an emotional picture in the remedies and you go, you know, that's what's going on. But, you know, I feel there's a lot of intuition in prescribing. So this is an area where your intuition would help.
Right, right. Well, I can certainly see that the interpretation of animal symptoms can definitely be an obstacle in the treatment of our pets and animals. I'm curious. I know we have obstacles when we treat humans in homeopathic practice. Do we have the same type of, you see the same type of obstacles in the treatment of animals, things like diet, vaccines, things like that?
Absolutely. The biggest obstacle to cure and the biggest thing that causes more animals than any other to live a shorter, more unhealthy life are vaccinations, the overuse of vaccinations. So the bottom line for everybody, most of you probably are already thinking this way, so I won't belabor the point. The bottom line is 1 or 2 vaccinations for distemper and parvo is the most that you should do to the puppy and no more the rest of the life. And then do rabies as required by law, as infrequently as possible. And don't depend on your local veterinarian to tell you what's required. They may make you do it more. So you need to know the law. Most states are every 3 years. There's currently a study underway that you can help fund, which will, by the end of the study, have rabies vaccines lasting 9 years. They are, rabies is a viral disease, so it should last a lifetime. As most viral diseases do. None of the other vaccines are needed for most animals, although sometimes you can have an endemic or an epidemic that may require a vaccine or two. I firmly believe in not automatically giving a remedy after a vaccine. I mean, what are you going to give? Lidum for puncture wound, Hypericum for puncture wound, Thuja because it's known to fix everything to do with vaccines, right? Or a remedy made from the vaccine itself, or listen, because it's rabies. I would rather do something more generic like Reiki, vitamin C. One researcher who I love, Lynn Peck, is finding that when you vaccinate an animal, it lowers the calcium in their body. And if she gives calcium before and for a few days after the vaccine, the animals don't have the negative side effects. So there's a whole lot looking at that, but the bottom line is just minimize your vaccines. And then nutrition, it's the same thing as people. What's the best for people to eat, fresh or processed? A lot of variety or the same thing every day? Local.
I think it depends on whether you're asking McDonald's or not, but yeah.
That's right. Local, organic, or imported, trashy, bad for the planet food. The same thing is true for dogs and cats and horses and birds. They need fresh food. And then, of course, it's different for dogs and cats in terms of what we eat, but the idea is fresh food. And then a lot of drugs are given indiscriminately, like heartworm prevention, worming, flea prevention, tick prevention. Some of these may be needed at times, but you need to not do them just automatically. The biggest obstacle to cure is probably people doing what their veterinarian says without thinking.
Yeah, I hear that.
I mean, I know a leading homeopath, absolute leading homeopath, who never had a dog until she was older. And she started out with vaccinating, feeding a processed diet, giving steroids for lameness and antibiotics for a uterine problem until somebody said, I think you should call Dr. Chambreau. And it's like as soon as somebody said that, she went, oh, my goodness, what have I been doing? So never feel guilty for what you've done. It's just an education process.
Mm-hmm. Christina, and I know you're a proponent of fresh food. Do you recommend that mostly you feed raw foods to the animals? And also, just could you comment quickly about dried food, especially for cats, and the impact that that has?
Kim's asking this because I visited them and I told them about dry food for their cat. No cat should ever be fed dry food because it's full of carbohydrates, which suck the moisture out of the body. And a healthy cat will never drink water. Their kidneys are designed not to have a lot of water intake, so when you force them to drink water, you get a high incidence of kidney disease. Kidney disease was the number one killer of cats for a long time, and now it's cancer from the vaccines. But kidney disease is still up there. That's sort of like the weak organ for the feline population. So no dry food. Either feed a high-quality canned food for dogs and cats. Dogs can have dry food, but I don't recommend it. Or feed a fresh food diet, either raw meat and pureed vegetables, raw meat with bones and pureed vegetables, or a purchased frozen raw food diet, or cooked meat. There's a variation of opinion, just like some people are better as vegans and vegetarians and others are more healthy following the Weston Price traditional diet of high meat, fermented vegetables. So every animal is different. But cats are obligate carnivores and need around 90% meat. Dogs can be about 50-50, but every animal is different. Some even thrive with getting grains, but most don't. And if you ever hear of somebody whose animal has cancer, which is so prevalent now, make sure that they are getting no carbohydrates, as that seems to really feed the cancer, and even conventional people believe that.
Christina, what about, I know you get these animals that come in and they've got, you know, varying health states. Can you give us some examples of how you develop a prognosis, how you evaluate the health at the intake? Are there certain symptoms that are an indication that the animal is more or less healthy?
Well, there are. And there's, first off, even before I do my evaluating, is I love it when people learn how to evaluate the health of their animals before they get really sick and even need to call me. Homeopathic vets have put together a list of early warning signs of illness, signs that indicate the energy field is out of balance, and they're things that most people consider normal that actually are an indication of early energy field imbalance, that the vital force is not healthy. Things like goop in the corner of the eyes, just that little cruddy black stuff you pick out in the morning, or dogs that have a doggy odor and need a bath every 3 to 4 weeks, or cats who vomit hairballs more than once or twice a year, cats who drink water, cats and dogs whose whiskers fall out, either the whiskers by the nose or up over the eyes. And you always have to carefully question. I had an animal yesterday that I spoke with the owner, and she said, in addition to this eye problem that had occurred, she said, you know, all the whiskers have fallen out on the right side. I found the whiskers on the floor yesterday. So that would be a sign, one of the symptoms of illness. And then today she sent me an email. She said she found an empty can that had some food in it and a little blood in it. So her dog had stuck his nose in a can that had a little edge on it, and he had actually cut off his whiskers. So that was not a symptom of early warning sign of illness. So that's a very important piece, and that's why my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, is you want to start keeping it when your animals are healthy, because you evaluate these early warning signs, and particularly you keep tracking the energy level. Another early warning sign that the vital force is out of whack is that they're, quote, getting old. Animals really, a healthy animal like a healthy person does not get old. If you're getting old, if you're acting stiff, it's because something's out of whack in your lifestyle or your treatments. Once they're 2 or 3 years old, they shouldn't be deteriorating after that until close to death. Brighthaven is a cat sanctuary and has cats that have lived to be 30. So there's the goal for your cat, Kim.
Interesting. Christina, when you prescribe for animals, do you use a particular posology method? Are you employing, you know, the fourth edition organon method, the fifth, the sixth edition? Do you do single dose? Do you use LMs? What is your approach?
Well, It's one of the things that I really spend a lot of time teaching in the advanced course that I do. I have a, for those of you who are on the line who are already homeopaths and know how to use the repertory and have treated some animals, if there's any way that you can get out to the D.C. area in June, on June 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th, we're doing a 2- and/or 4-day class where you bring your cases and we work through things like posology, looking up animal symptoms, from the cases that you actually bring to the course. It's incredible. And unfortunately, we have too few people registered for it right now, so we may have to not have it this year. So if anybody is interested in taking that, they need to email me at healthyanimals@AOL.com within the next 12 hours. So basically, get off the call, check your calendar, and call me.
Can you repeat that email again one more time?
Yep. And for anybody who wants to email me about any issues, they can use this email, healthyanimals@AOL.com. And another way to say it is healthyanimals@AOL.com.
Okay, great.
And so posology. So what I teach in that class, as well as in my intermediate class now, is I need to teach all three methods. I would say that 80% of the homeopathic veterinarians are still using fourth edition dry dosing or single dosing, putting the dry pellets into water and just as an administration mode. Or I also want to emphasize that it is fine to put homeopathic remedies in food. It really does work. If you've got the right remedy, it'll work through food, unless you have an individual that's really averse to the food that you're feeding. So you can put the any of this can go into food. I prefer using dairy products like little cream cheese because of, it just is so bland that it's not going to throw the remedy off. Then veterinarians started using LM potencies. So there's probably 20 or 30% of homeopathic veterinarians who are using LM potencies at least part of the time, particularly in animals that are very weak or very sensitive. We don't see very much in terms of sensitivity with animals, but we do see it in some animals. And then only a very few practitioners are using the fifth edition of taking the two pellets and putting them in a cup of water and shaking that two times and then diluting again. So only a few practitioners are doing that. Jeff Feynman and I've been doing that pretty much for the last year, either LM or the liquid dilution. And I've got to say that I have mixed results. I certainly have some cases that I've actually gone back to the dry and had it work when the LM or the liquid wasn't working. So I think any of the three can work. I definitely would disagree with the people that say that fourth edition dry dosing can't cure, because it certainly has been curing for all these years that we were following the fourth edition instead of the newer ones. So there, it's a wide range.
Interesting. I'm curious, Christina, what is the scope of efficacy in treating animals? I mean, what diseases do you find a great deal of success with? What is more challenging? And are there conditions that you simply don't find any success with?
Interesting. I'll answer the last one. I would say, and this is not just for me personally, but for, through the Veterinary Society and the listservs that I'm on, I would say there is no condition that cannot be cured with homeopathy that's potentially curable. I mean, a broken leg is, you have to set it. And, if they're born without half a mouth, it's not going to come back.
Right.
But even some things like congenital anomalies can either heal completely or get a lot better. Jeff Levy had a case of a cat that on ultrasound you could see a hole in the septum between the ventricles. And through homeopathic treatment, that got smaller and smaller until there was no blood that was regurgitating backwards. So it's amazing what can be cured. I would say the one that most of us have the most trouble treating is sarcoptic mange. Should be easy. But I actually did a whole lecture for the Holistic Veterinary Society on sarcoptic mange, and when I interviewed people around the country, it was some people had total success and other people just struggled with it all the time. Next is cats and hyperthyroidism. A lot of people struggle with that. Some do fairly good. Others struggle with that a lot. Because it's more of an end stage, usually it's old cats. And so, of course, any condition that you don't start treating until they're getting pretty far down the line, you're going to have less success. But I still have ones that, out of the blue, really turn around. If you can catch vaccinosis problems, whatever they are, early, then those turn around excellently. That's one of the most brilliant. If an animal clearly is ill since a vaccine, homeopathy is the modality of choice over all others for that.
You know, Christina, when we're treating human beings with homeopathy and they come back in after a month or whatever, and, you know, we ask them, how are you doing? Well, sometimes they say, you know, I'm not doing well, and then we take their case and we find out that they're doing really well. But at least we do have some type of verbal communication that we can get back from the patient, you know. And oftentimes they say, you know, I haven't felt this good in 10 years. My energy is better. My symptoms are 70% improved. But you obviously can't get that type of response from an animal. So what do you use as indicators to tell that the remedy is correct and is actually working in the case?
Well, it's just like an infant. You can't ask an infant how they're feeling. So it totally relies on the observational skills of the animal's guardian and your observational skills as a veterinarian if you're actually seeing the animal, which most veterinarians are doing, or most homeopathic practitioners are doing. And then it's pretty much the same. You really focus first on energy level and being able to evaluate the response even more so than in people, because as you're just saying that, Kim, I'm realizing that with people, you can walk them through, they can express it more easily to you with adults. So with animals, you have to make sure when you took the case in the first place that you quantified everything, because people don't remember that well, so especially when they're observing someone else. And so you have to be able to, if the person says, well, I don't know about the energy level, and you say, well, how long are the walks that Susie is taking now? And they go, well, Susie's walking about 10 blocks, and then she's sort of tired, but she's fine, you know, she's okay coming home, but she wants to turn around, so I don't know if that's so good. And if you've taken good notes, you can then say, well, I see here that a month ago Susie couldn't do more than 2 blocks. And they go, oh, you're right. So taking quantified symptoms in the initial case-taking and then at each follow-up, being sure you quantify the symptoms is really important. And sometimes in the initial case-taking, so that you can do a good evaluation in the follow-up, and also in helping to find a remedy, you may need to test for modalities. So you can't ask the animal if the reason they're lying on the cold floor is because it makes them feel better. But you can test by putting them in a warm area and observing them, and then putting them in a cold area and observing them. You can see if they desire heat or cold by offering them, especially with cats, a heating pad, and putting them on the heating pad, seeing if they stay on it or get off of it. So that's some of the tricks in evaluating how they're doing.
Interesting.
But first is energy, second is emotional state, third is energy and thirst, and then the specific symptoms that you're treating.
And what about with the behavioral issues that we see with animals? I mean, first of all, is that an indicator in the improvement of the animal? And how successful is homeopathy in treating behavioral problems?
Well, that's a really good question, because I used to treat everything with homeopathy. People would call me and say, my animal does blank in terms of a behavioral problem. And I would try to treat it homeopathically, and I'd have success with some and not success with others. And then I did some lectures on behavior, so I thought I'd better do a little bit more learning. And I watched the dog whisperer, Cesar Millan. I watched his videos, and I watched him cure problems that I had been trying to treat with homeopathy. And he did it by simply changing the relationship of the guardian to the animal. by having the guardian take the alpha role. And reading some other books, I discovered that, particularly with dogs, this is with dogs, of course, dogs are pack animals, and somebody has to be the leader. And if you don't take the leadership role on very clearly, a dog who is not a leader capacity will be forced to take on that leadership role, and in doing so will be very stressed, or may be very stressed and then become ill. So I now am much more careful about making sure that the relationship is good, that the behavior problems aren't because the husband and wife are arguing, or the kids are creating such havoc in the house, or people aren't smoking cigarettes or marijuana and that's throwing the animal off, or, you know, there are a wide range of things that can be causing the behavior problems. The second piece of behavior problems that I've taught forever is, it's really fun. I so love teaching. So imagine me standing in front of you teaching, and I'm in front of a big room of students, and I walk in a circle. And inside this circle is healthy behavior, and outside the circle is unhealthy behavior. So you can have an animal that's healthy and sweet and nice. You can have an animal that's healthy and sort of irritable. You can have an animal that's pretty independent or slightly timid, and all of that can be perfect health. And then you may have this timid animal that's very, very timid, and or an aggressive animal that's biting a whole lot. That's clearly not health. And then you have sort of the gray areas. And when you heal animals, sometimes this very timid animal who, because of maybe they're in a pulsatile state, they will revert to being sort of a normal crabby animal, and people say, hey, I want my sick animal back.
Interesting. Are you still there, Christina?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Unfortunately, I'm sorry about this connection. It's not very good.
Okay.
So, Christina, you know, one of the challenges I could see, you know, like if you're using the repertory and you're trying to repertorize a case, is that, you know, anatomical parts for animals aren't necessarily the same as they are for human beings. Like, you know, you've got arms on people, but, I mean, dogs don't really have arms. I mean, they've got four legs, I guess. So does that correlate? Or like a bird would have wings, would that be their arms? How does that work exactly?
It does. You have to actually, if you're treating animals, you need to know their anatomy. Dogs and cats, it's pretty straightforward. You can pretty much recognize, you know, the toes on animals are like fingers and toes on you. But with a horse, it's completely different. So you have to, like you would think on a horse, that the fetlock is the wrist. The wrist actually is the next joint up, the carpus. So you have to know the real bony, how they match up. So it is true that the wings of a bird are the front legs of a person. Now it gets tricky if an animal is limping on the front leg when it puts weight on the leg. There is nothing that's going to tell you that. So when they're walking, they limp. You can't use when they're walking, they limp on their arm, because that's not in the human repertory. So sometimes you have to use something in the leg section to give you the modality, even though the problem's up in the arm. And if you have problems that are in front and back, then, of course, you would use front legs and back lower legs, lower limbs, and upper limbs in the repertory. So it's just something you have to keep in mind. But remember, it doesn't matter if you make a mistake, because how we do homeopathy is we never base it on one symptom. There's always, you need at least the tripod of three important symptoms that are in different parts of the body. So homeopathy is very forgiving.
Absolutely. So, Christina, if I wanted to get more information about the work that you're doing, or just more information about veterinary homeopathy, where would I go?
Well, one place, of course, is my website, which is ChristinaChambreau.com, and that's ChristinaCham, as in mother, B as in boy, R-E-A-U, homeopathicvet.com. And for finding a homeopathic veterinarian, there's a website, theavh.org, which is the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. And another invitation for all of you homeopaths who are on this call is, if the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy's annual conference is going to be in Santa Fe, New Mexico, from the 14th through the 16th of November, and you can attend. You don't have to be a vet to attend. And on the 13th will be an introduction to homeopathy for animals that Jill Elliott and myself do. So please send anybody that you know in that area who's new to this to attend that class, and they'll get a one-day intro to how homeopathy works in animals. So those are a couple of websites to go to.
Yeah, let me just repeat the email, because you kind of faded out there for a second. It's CHRI, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, I, N as in Nancy, A, Chambro, CHA, M as in Mary, BREAU.com. Also, I'd like to say that Christina is an incredibly entertaining and wonderful educator, so I would highly recommend that you, if you have an opportunity to go and study with her, that you do so. And also, let me say that the Veterinary Academy Conference is, generally speaking, one of the best homeopathic conferences that happens in North America, human, animal, whatever. It's incredibly high quality, incredibly good speakers. They talk about real serious diseases, and they have videos, and it's not just for veterinarians. It's a fabulous seminar, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Do you know how would people get information about that conference? Where would be the best place to go?
They would go to the website I just said, which is the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy website, the A-V as in veterinary, H as in homeopathy.org.
Okay, great. So, Christina, we have some people who submitted some questions. There were three questions, so let me go ahead and ask those questions to you, and then maybe we'll open it up for the other participants so they can ask some questions as well.
Great.
So one of the questions that was submitted by somebody who couldn't participate in the call is, if you treat an acute flare-up of a chronic issue, are you driving the disease deeper?
Well, it depends on how you treat it. As long as you're aware that you're treating an acute flare-up of the chronic disease, you definitely want to treat it, and it can even help cure the underlying disease. So that's where you're going to want to be looking at complementary remedies, remedies that follow well. And I like particularly Rehman's book, Abdur Rehman, R-E-H-M-A-N, The Encyclopedia of Remedy Relationships. I find that to be a wonderfully written and very useful book for helping to find the acute remedy. But again, at any time when you're treating, you simply want to find the remedy that fits what's happening right now. So when you have the acute flare-up of the chronic disease, if no modalities have changed and you simply have a new symptom, you may want to repeat the remedy that you've been using. If, however, you have new modalities and new physical generals, then you're going to want to be looking at giving a different remedy, and then you may need to go back to the remedy that you've been doing before, just like it is with people.
Right. Let me just say that Abdur Rehman, who's a German homeopath, who wrote, as you said, a wonderful book on the relationship of remedies, his actual database is in the family repertory of Radar. So if you actually have a copy of Radar, you can actually limit your analysis to remedies which are complementary or follow well after, based on the work of Abdur Rehman. So thank you for mentioning that. I agree. He is a really an excellent work.
Yep.
Okay, so another one of the questions that was submitted by someone who couldn't participate in the call is, can you treat emotional issues or support the vital force at all while waiting to start homeopathic treatment with a homeopath?
Well, absolutely. The first thing, I find that flower essences are incredible for treating emotional problems, and I've never, I think once in 30 years have I even heard that a flower essence made an animal worse. So you're totally safe using them. And it can take the edge off of many of the problems. The other piece to remember is that you may need to be treating yourself when your animal is ill and you're waiting for a homeopathic veterinarian. If you know homeopathy, it's fine to go ahead and begin treating the animal yourself with whatever remedy you think is most important, as long as, and this is key, critical, super important, you write down what you've done. When, you know, what day did you give the remedy, what potency, why did you select that remedy, and then you record the changes that happen afterwards. But definitely, flower essences can help. You can prescribe the homeopathy yourself, and you can even work with just sending good vibes to your animal, being calm yourself, not being upset. There is not a reason to have to wait very long for a homeopathic veterinarian. If you go to the Academy website, theavh.org, it gives a list of veterinarians who will do telephone consulting. So you can usually find a veterinarian that you can work with within a week, maybe 2 weeks at the most. I would say within a week. So very good ones are available.
That's great. You were talking about the owner, the pet's owner, using writing down what they've given. And is this someplace where you could use your book on the Healthy Animals Journal?
The Healthy Animals Journal is, you can do it in a notebook, you can do it on scraps of paper, you can do it like I did when my daughter was young on crossword puzzles that I did every day from the newspaper. But what my book does is actually has a bookmark that has it's the master symptom list. And it's pre-printed, energy, emotional state, appetite, thirst, and then space for you to write in every symptom there ever was and that are there currently. And the back of the bookmark lists those early warning signs, so you can periodically check that. And then here's a place where I think homeopathy has done a disservice to healing. And a intuitive, when I was telling her about working about my book, added this piece into the book. And that is in the Healthy Animals Journal or in your own journals, please write down in pretty colors the things your animal does that are sweet, loving, funny, happy, joyful, so that you can focus on the positive, because then you get more positive. When you're and at the same time, in regular black or blue ink, you track the symptoms. When I used to have people just tracking the symptoms, that meant they spent their whole time focusing on what's going wrong, what's getting better of what's going wrong, as opposed to that's happening, but also, oh, he looked at me and he winked his eyes at me and like that. So it's really important to do that. And so my journal makes it very easy. I have a separate treatment page. So you do treatments on a separate sheet, and then you evaluate, you keep an ongoing journal of how the symptoms are going. Makes it really easy. I think there should be one for people, actually.
It's a good idea, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's one final question that was asked by one of the people who couldn't participate in the call today. And the question was, is there a list of recommended remedies to have on hand that it's most useful when treating dogs, and if so, in what potency?
Hmm. Well, it's interesting. You know, when we talked about posology, we just really talked about administration and not the potencies to be given. There are books, unfortunately, that are commonly used by people because they think they need a book about animals in order to treat animals. And so Dr. McLeod's book, among others, lists specific potencies for specific remedies for specific conditions, and it does a great disservice to homeopathy. So the right potent, unfortunately, it's hard to have every potency you need. I think right. Having a remedy kit in a 30C is a good average. If you have a lot of young animals, you ought to have a 1M remedy kit. If you have a lot of very old animals, you should have LM kit. The potency needed is dependent upon how sure you are of the remedy, the physical condition of the animal, the pathology, and if there's an aggravation because you have a close remedy but not the correct remedy, how much damage is the aggravation going to cause? And how well can you and or the animal tolerate the aggravations? I'm sure I'm missing one here, but that gives you the idea. In terms of a list of remedies, I have a remedy kit that you can get at 1-800-HOMEOPATHY. I have two kits. One is an acute and one is a chronic. I sort of just flipped a coin between the acute and chronic because you'll be using both for both. But that's one. And then various other veterinarians, Dr. Schaefer, I think, has one at Washington Homeopathic, and other veterinarians have them at other places. Now, I know everybody on this call knows this, but as I'm speaking about buying a kit or buying multiple remedies, I always want to remind people, and please spread the word to anybody new to homeopathy, that remedies do not expire. I've seen James Kent's kit that people are still taking remedies from that was made 100 years ago. Have you seen Hahnemann's kit, Kim?
I haven't seen it personally, but I'm aware that, you know, it exists.
People are still taking remedies from it.
Yeah.
So don't throw away your remedies is the bottom line.
Yeah. I know, for example, people still use the Carol Dunham 200s, and they report tremendous success with them. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yep, and it's something to remind people that are new to this. I'm sure everybody on this call knows that. So in terms of the list of remedies, it's really your sort of, you know, the Polycrest. I do find that most animals respond well to Polycrest. Occasionally, we need the newer remedies or smaller remedies. But in general, more animals need Polycrest. If you want to start by learning remedies, the first batch of remedies to learn for animals are the vaccinosis remedies. So go to generalities, vaccines, effects of, and learn those remedies, especially the more Polycrest ones of them, because those are the ones you're going to use most often, because that's what's affected animals the worst, because we've over-vaccinated them so dreadfully. So that's
sure.
where I would start.
Well, what about the nozodes, Christina? do you use those?
I don't. There is a lot of controversy about nozodes or not nozodes. I guess here's the thing. To me, the way homeopathy works is like cures like. You have an energy imbalance, and you find the remedy that matches that energy imbalance by recording the symptoms and finding a remedy that in the proving and in clinical practice produces those same symptoms, and when you give the correct remedy, then it's cured. So how can a nozode ever prevent disease ad infinitum out into the future the way a vaccine does? Certainly, Hahnemann gave belladonna, and it prevented scarlet fever, but that's because it was the genus Epidemica. Certainly, I've had times where unvaccinated litters started to come down with parvo disease, and then I gave the parvo nozode. But that's because the vital force was already exposed, and therefore it was in a like-cures-like situation. The homeopathic nozodes for animal diseases have not been proved, so you're giving an unproved remedy. So the only place that I believe in using nozodes is in after exposure. Now, having said that, if somebody is in that place where they don't want to give regular vaccines, they're still pretty nervous, maybe they've seen puppies and kittens in their area come down with distemper or parvo, then if they do a repeated 30C maybe every week, then they're giving the remedy after, they're giving the nozode after exposure, even though they don't know it was exposed. And so that may work. There are other veterinarians who firmly believe that nozodes work, but Ron Schultz, who's the professor of immunology at the University of Wisconsin College of Veterinary Medicine, did a study, unfortunately for the dogs, where he did parvo vaccines, parvo nozodes, and nothing. And ran a whole study, and the parvo nozodes were worthless. Now, these were animals that were not exposed. They were virgin animals, but it just goes to show that by itself, it doesn't prevent.
What about just using them as remedies, Christina? Like, because we do have some of the nozodes, like tuberculinum or metarhinum, which have...
If they're proved, use them.
Okay, all right.
Once we can do provings of parvo on people... Then we can use it as a remedy. Why not? It's just
right.
a diarrhea remedy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, that's exactly the way I see it, too. So I'm gonna open it up and let some other people ask questions. But before I do that, Christine, is there anything else that you want to add or share? Any work that you're doing? Anything you're excited about? Or anything you'd like to say before we open it up?
Well, I guess I would I invite every one of you to email me at healthyanimals@aol.com and ask to be on my newsletter. And I'll send you a reply email that is full of websites you can go to help end hunger, help save the environment, all sorts of fun, cool stuff.
That's great, Christina. Well, it's great to have you on. Let me open it up and let some other people ask questions. Hold
okay.
on. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
Yes.
Hello,
hi.
Christina.
Does somebody have a question for Dr. Chambreau?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
If you have a dog that's very nervous, like a little poodle, and because I have one, every time I take her to get her hair cut, she's a nervous wreck. Can you suggest a remedy for that?
Well, again, that's one that may fall into what I was talking about before. Imagine me standing in front of the room, and you have to make the decision, is this nervousness an indication of an imbalance in the vital force, in which case a remedy would help, or is it simply a nervous animal, or is it because this is not a good groomer for this dog to go to, or is it because something else is happening? You know, if it's only to the groomer, I would first try a different groomer. I would try flower essences. I would try behavioral techniques and training, like desensitization, before I tried a homeopathic remedy. Now, if, on the other hand, you have a nervous dog at going to the groomer who also has a history of diarrhea and also has a history of vomiting, and usually those symptoms occur after midnight, and the dog is particularly chilly and has problems in the cold, that the diarrhea and vomiting tend to be worse when it's cold out, so everyone should think for a moment, what homeopathic remedy would that be? So if you have a full case, then you would give Arsenicum album. Make sense to you?
Thank you.
Great. Somebody else have a question they'd like to ask Christina?
Yes, I have a question.
Can you? Go ahead.
This is Varda. I have a dog that's been suffering from epilepsy. She's having seizures, and I'm treating her successfully with Cicuta. And it's much better from 20 minutes long, very intense seizures. It's now like a few seconds, not losing consciousness, not losing control on bowel, getting up right after and being active. So it helped her a great deal, but once in a while, she will have a seizure. So now she is from small potencies, from 30C, she's now up to 1 m in water daily. And I wonder if there's something else I should try.
Well, I would be concerned if you're giving a 1 m or a 10 m daily that you're palliating. It's hard to palliate seizures, though, so it could be that you've moved towards a cure. The key thing here is that no matter what the question is, no matter what the condition is, you have to be looking not just at the epilepsy, but you have to be looking at everything else. So if the dog is better in every other way, no goop in the corner of the eye, appetite is improved, the emotional state is improved all the time, the energy level is better. If everything is better, then you would say the Cicuta is probably working, but I would switch, because I'm concerned about that high a potency daily, I would switch to the LM potencies and start working with the LM potencies. Because what's happening is you have not gotten a cure. To get a cure, you don't have to keep giving remedies. Now, sometimes the best we can do is to palliate or to sort of move towards a cure and not get a complete cure because animals have been so weakened over the years, over the generations. So I would, number one, be looking at all the other symptoms, and number two, switch to an LM of Cicuta before I did anything else. Sometimes you think that you should never go down from a 10M to another potency. But I've had to sometimes, I've seen people as well as animals treated where we tried a 30C, a 200, went back to a 30, then tried a 100, and the 100 worked. Or we were up to a 1M and went to an LM1, and then 2, 3, 4, and then they were cured. So I would definitely experiment with different posology, maybe doing the fifth edition posology with liquids. Well, you're doing the liquids. So I would switch to the LM in this case and make sure you're looking at the whole animal and all the other symptoms.
Great.
Every other area. So I will try LM in water. That
mm-hmm.
will be, yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Other questions for Dr. Chambreau?
Yeah,
I have a question.
Hello?
Is somebody else talking?
I will join later. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about a kitten. Well, she actually may be a cat. She may be about a year old. I found her at the beginning of February. She'd been hit by a car. And she's doing very well, with the exception of she came with what the vet says is a virus, an upper respiratory virus. And I've tried calibichromium, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And antibiotics and colloidal silver, and they all help for a while, and then it comes back. She's got plenty of energy. Her appetite's fine, but she does seem to have this kind of chronic nasal thing and one runny eye, which she's blind in that eye from the accident. But and I just wondered if you had any suggestions.
Okay. First off, earlier Kim asked, are there things... First off, Kim asked earlier, are there things that can't be cured with homeopathy? And the runny eye in the blind eye might not be able to be cured with homeopathy. It might be cured, but it might not. Sometimes after an accident like that, there's such a physical change that that symptom might persist. The upper respiratory problem, cats have a lot of problem with herpes. And it's sometimes doing... lysine can help clear that. So a month of lysine, and you'll have to ask a holistic vet or email me, I don't know it off the top of my head, will help. And otherwise, it really is finding the correct homeopathic remedy that matches everything about the animal. Now, the problem is, as I'm sure you've already found out, this little kitten probably has no other symptoms. So then it's like, well, what do you do now? So with, I mean, Calibic, I would expect there to be a nasal discharge that was hanging from the nose that was thick and rubbery. I'd expect sort of some behavior issues maybe going along with it, but couldn't, you know, might not be. So I would start looking at one remedy a month and then paying attention to the reaction to that remedy. If you can't come up with a clear remedy, sometimes giving the triad of calcarea, lycopodium, and then sulfur, starting with whichever one seems to fit the modalities of the cat the best, will sometimes open up the case so that you now see some other symptoms that you can prescribe on. So doing one of those once a month. Be sure your potencies are pretty high. When you have young animals, you often need high potencies, either the LM1 and moving it through maybe 2 weeks on LM1, 2 weeks on LM2, or, you know, unless it's otherwise indicated, or doing a 1M or 10M in the liquid dilution, giving it one, two, or three times in a row, and then waiting a month or two and seeing what happens, and then moving to the next remedy. That is one that can be very challenging. They'll often just have this snarfle noise, like, and yet in all other ways be healthy. And so then it becomes a one-sided case, which makes it more difficult. We all know that one-sided cases in general are more difficult to treat.
Great. I think we have time for one more question.
Can I ask a question?
I've got a question.
Did you ask a question already?
No.
No, sir.
Okay, yes, go ahead and please ask the question then.
I have a cat, and this cat it's already almost 10 years old, but in a very good emotional and energetic spirit, in my opinion, like at least in behavioral-wise. But from the time we got him, he had an obstruction of the tear duct. And he have all the time kind of running eye because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, he have very often spitting a hairball, which today realizes maybe because of a dry food.
Right.
And also sometimes he have like other type of vomiting from a food he don't like. So how would you recommend to do this? We know that this actually obstruction of the eye, the breeder told me it started after vaccination, when the first vaccination is a kitten. So would you actually go back to this, or what would be your recommendation?
Yep, you always look at the causality, the etiology. So I would do eye stricture of the lacrimal duct, and then I would also use the generalities vaccinosis. The remedy I would think of in first try is silica, but I would also, because of the hairballs and the vomiting, I would make sure you switch to a raw food diet or at least to a canned diet. Often, with many problems, give a month or two of feeding a better diet. If a cat won't switch to a better diet, then you need to use homeopathy to get them healthy enough to switch to a healthier diet. Let's see if we can't get that one other person in, Kim.
Okay. Is there a gentleman who wanted to ask a question?
Yes, I have a quiche hound dog, and he's pretty submissive. When I first met him and I clashed heads, and I dominated. But then he had a little limp in his one hip, so I gave him a couple herbs to clear it up that I used at my clinic on humans, and right after that he got irritable bowel, and I really have not been able to get him much better through a few different homeopathic remedies. Any suggestions?
Again, you need to really take the case, list all of the symptoms, particularly modalities, and I would use the rubric in that case, generalities, medicaments, abuse of or oversensitive to medicaments because it happened after the herbs. And I'd look in the, I'd have to go looking, but I'd look in the diarrhea after medicaments section if there's one for that. I don't think so. And you may have to, you know, you may have to work with a professional homeopath if you're getting stuck yourself. Everybody should try it themselves first, those of you who are trained in homeopathy, but if it doesn't work, then you need to consult with a professional. And you may have to do more than one professional is the other thing. And if those of you who are on the call have questions that didn't get answered, you can email me again at healthyanimals@aol.com. It's all yours, Kim.
Christina, I get the sense that there's a lot of people who have a lot of questions that they have about their animals. So maybe you'd be kind enough to come back and do another one of these calls in the near future.
You schedule it. I'll be there.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to unmute the lines and let everybody give you a big personal thank you because you did a wonderful job as always, and I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. So thank you personally, and I'll let everybody else thank you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank